Whether you want to escape the snow or plan it, Arias Medical has you covered. Try a rewarding travel assignment during the holiday season with Arias Medical Group. Call Arias at 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's AUREUS medical.com.
This is the PT Pinecast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pinecast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
The next episode of the PT Pinecast starts right now, or the best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Our guest tonight is a physical therapist with a clinical mastery in cancer rehabilitation. She is an internationally respected oncology PT, key opinion leader, author, educator, and consultant. She's the founder and lead faculty of her own Cancer Rehabilitation Academy and is the Cancer Rehabilitation Coordinator for Aurora Healthcare in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Welcome to the PT Pinecast, Leslie Waltke. Leslie, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
That's a pretty cool intro. I don't think we've had anybody on the show. I was talking with our executive producer, Rachel German, and she said, how do you feel about cancer PT? And I said, you know, I don't know much about it. And that's typically when I get excited about a topic, because I think we should know more about it.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple reasons I monumentally agree with you. Number one, we have what I call a cancer rehab gap. So oncology doctors and nurses don't know enough about rehab, and rehab professionals don't know enough about cancer. So they've got this big gap in the middle, and unfortunately, our people with cancer are falling through the middle and not getting the rehab services they need.
And they're sitting there saying, what are we supposed to do, right?
Right. And the other reason is that, I mean, these are shocking statistics. One out of every two men in the U.S. and one out of every three women in the U.S. in their lifetime will be diagnosed with some kind of cancer. So no matter what kind of PT you work in, you're going to run into patients who have a history of cancer. It's good for our profession to know kind of what to know, what's okay, what's not okay.
Right. Because I remember going through acute care, the C word is scary. You know, it's scary to people who have the diagnosis. And for me, you know, I haven't worked in an acute care environment, but I would be triply cautious and probably, I guess, most likely from what you're saying, err on the side of being too cautious for those patients.
Right. And it is interesting. And I was in the same boat that you hear as a professional, you hear the word cancer, and you just go into panic mode, like, oh my God. And that is a pretty typical response, but that's a response that we're trying to change. And the line I throw out for that is, we got to stop treating these people like they're going to break, because right, they're not going to break. And then under treating them is not helpful. And we've been doing that for decades, either completely ignoring them or treating them with kid gloves. And again, they're being underserviced, undertreated, and that's more harmful to them than anything.
Well, let's start from the start. When did you find your way to oncology PT? Because this is kind of a niche area and something you've taken upon yourself to spread the word, having your own rehab academy. So when did you kind of make this and plant your flag in it?
I've been doing oncology rehab now for, almost 20 years. It was myself and there was a good handful of oncology PTs that were very forward thinking that started to challenge that idea back in the, you know, mid to late 80s, early 90s. Of the thought back then was, from a oncology standpoint, was, hey, I just, don't worry about your arm, don't worry about your whatever, you know, we just saved your life, so don't worry about it.
Right.
I'm starting to kind of challenge that idea.
I mean, when I was taking acute care, it was white blood cell count below this, cancer, no, no, no. It was error on the side of caution, because you might, like as you said, you might break these people. So as long as they're still breathing and the oxygen sats are good, just kind of let them be. But that's under treating, and that's not what PT is about.
Right. We've learned that exercise is safe no matter how low somebody's blood counts go. Right. Now, you're going to have to make modifications, obviously. So if somebody has an absolute neutrophil count of below 500, they're obviously at high risk for developing an infection. So you need to protect them from infection, gloving, gowning, staying away from crowds. But it's still safe to exercise in that mode. When somebody's got low platelets, again, you're not going to want them jogging or bench pressing or doing, you know, extreme yoga, but they still can walk around the block. They can still get up and do, you know, gentle stretching.
Now, when you come across rehab professionals who are taking your class or talking to you for the first time, time. How do you approach getting that message across, you know, in a safe way? Because they're going to be singing your tune in front of you, but then they're going to go back to work and they're going to have to actually do this. And when you look at a cancer patient, you want to make sure, I just want to make sure they're okay. But by not making them move, you could be doing them a disservice. How do you make them feel confident in that?
It's tough. Other than really honestly going by listening to the patient and using their response to the activity as your guideline.
Okay.
If you're in acute care, you know, your nurses are going to be, pardon the pun, acutely aware of their of their blood count. So just check in with a nurse, say, I'm going to get Mr. So-and-so. And again, you know that patients who sometimes they have a hemoglobin of 8 and they feel fine. Mm-hmm. So get them up and take them for a walk. And then sometimes people with a hemoglobin of 12 are like, oh, I just don't feel like doing this. So if you literally go by protecting your patient, either from an infection perspective or a bleeding perspective, if you just simply go by their response to exercise, so get up and move for 2 or 3 minutes. How do you feel? If I either feel the same or I feel a bit better, then you keep on going. And then 3 minutes later, you ask yourself that question again. And if the answer is I feel the same or a little bit better, you keep going until you say, okay, I think that's enough for today.
So it's more about confidence right there and maintaining attention, making sure you're paying attention. Physical therapy and cancer care improves, lengthens, and saves lives.
Isn't that powerful?
Yeah.
Because it is one of the coolest things to say as a physical therapist. If you get yourself exercising routinely, it actually reduces the risk of the cancer coming back. And that has been found true for both people with breast cancer and people with colon cancer. We're fairly sure that we're going to add other types of cancers to that list in the next few years. The whole reason we put people through cancer treatment is to reduce the risk of the cancer coming back. So when you can add one more thing to that, that is really powerful for a PT to be able to say somebody.
Which is not even a foreign body. It's not even a foreign thing. You're stimulating the body to produce its own healthy response.
Yeah. And again, we don't understand why exercise reduces the risk of recurrence, but it does. And unfortunately, there's an unfortunate dichotomy too, that when we treat people for cancer using surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation, it typically decreases their health, mm-hmm. which can, you know, negatively impact their life expectancy. A perfect example is, most people find this surprising, but actual breast cancer chemotherapy tends to make women gain weight. Okay, most people say, oh, you get on chemo, you lose all this weight. Right. That is accurate for many types of cancers, but for our women with breast cancer, and there's a lot of them out there, they actually tend to gain weight on chemotherapy. Now, that weight gain actually increases risk of cancer recurrence. So the treatment that we're using to decrease the risk of recurrence actually can increase risk of recurrence. So getting people on a walking program, a gentle strengthening program, can actually maintain body mass index while they're in treatment, and then either maintain it or improve it after treatment's done in survivorship. It impacts both length of survival and overall survival.
Now, where are oncology physical therapists? Now, they're obviously in the acute care setting, but are they anywhere else?
Most of us are actually in the outpatient setting.
See, I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The majority of what we do is outpatient. Almost 70% of all cancer treatment is done on an outpatient basis. So most cancer rehab clinics then are all done outpatient as well. So we do have acute care folks that see people while they're in-house for a while, but the majority of treatment is done on an outpatient basis.
And one of the quotes that jumped out at me on your Twitter feed that I was stalking earlier was that exercise only evidence-based treatment for cancer-related fatigue. And we like to say everything's evidence-based. And
I honestly believe that in 5 to 10 years, that exercise will actually be considered cancer treatment. That's how powerful it is.
Good.
So it hits it in a two-pronged way. So the major line is cancer sucks.
Right.
And it does. The diagnosis itself, but the cancer treatment is horrible.
Right.
That's really adds a lot of the pile of cancer sucks. But when patients exercise during chemotherapy, during radiation, depending on the type of cancer, we get them started preoperatively, postoperatively, that we can substantially reduce the fatigue level, the cardiopulmonary loss, the nausea, the weight changes, bone mineral density loss, muscle loss, all that stuff that happens can be either minimized, eliminated, or completely prevented with an exercise program.
And it's not going to have any negative detrimental effects on the body. In fact, all those positive effects, as long as you are keenly aware of the counts.
Yeah, correct. There have been tons and tons and tons of studies now talking about the benefits of exercise during cancer treatment. Now, they'll argue with what kind of exercise, how much, the prescription, but not one of them has ever found it to be detrimental when, when done safely.
Right. So you think within 5 to 10 years, we're really going to hone in on exactly what the best dose and intensity and length would really be.
Right. That an actual be considered cancer treatment. Perfect. So now you can use exercise as a tool to minimize cardiopulmonary, musculoskeletal, and functional loss with treatment. You can also use exercise as a tool to lengthen survival and decrease overall survival. So it's actually somehow changing the biology of the cancer cell to make the cancer not come back as often.
So that's
really cool stuff.
We'd be doing a disservice to our cancer patients by not getting them up and moving and not exercising them.
Right. And that's a huge conversation we need to have with our family members. Anytime that anyone that we love is injured, whether it's a knee replacement or a stroke or a cancer diagnosis, we tend to coddle and, sit down, I'll get that. And especially that's, highlighted with a cancer diagnosis. So we really have to tell people, you need to make him get up and do that. It's okay for her to reach and pick up that bag.
Not only okay, but it's in their best interest.
Yes, it's better for them to do so. So it's kind of a mind shift, but it's really interesting how with somebody who's been diagnosed with cancer, once you get that point across, it's pretty intuitive. People like to move, and as soon as they move, they start feeling better. And so people always say, don't you? You've got to have a compliance issue in oncology. We don't, pretty much across the board.
Good.
Our patients, our cancellation no-show rate is usually much less than the standard orthopedic physical therapy clinic, just because these people are, number one, fighting for their lives, and number two, because they immediately feel better. I always have to laugh because if you treat somebody who comes in with a frozen shoulder or a knee replacement, they come in to your clinic and their pain is a 3 and they leave your clinic and their pain is a 6.
Yeah.
But when you work with cancer patients, they will come in at a 6 and leave at a 2 with just simple stuff that, whether it's just getting them moving, some gentle soft tissue work, some stretching, just getting them on the treadmill for 5 minutes, they will almost immediately feel better. So it's very, very rewarding work.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that's got to be really, really rewarding to see those people want to come in, and when they leave, they feel better.
Pretty much everybody feels better when they go out the door. So it's really very, very cool work.
So exercise being an evidence-based treatment for cancer-related fatigue and other things that go along with it, you've done something cool with a sport that's near and dear to my heart, which is triathlon. I want you to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I work with a very proactive group of physicians and nurses and rehab professionals. 6 years ago, we were looking for a way to, I call it barrier jumping, get over this barrier. So the research says, obviously, we just talked about that exercise is phenomenally helpful to cancer survivors. But we know that the average American does not exercise enough.
Right.
Even though it's more important for the cancer survivor, they do it even less than the average population. Or if they start post-treatment, they tend to stop within 3 to 6 months. So we can get people moving and exercising under our cancer care window, but once they step out into the survivorship world, we lose them and they stop exercising. So we came up with a concept we call Team Phoenix. It was started by myself, and it was actually our breast surgeon's idea. She's a triathlete herself. So literally when somebody is finished with their cancer treatment, we begin training them, a 14-week training program, to complete a sprint distance triathlon.
That is awesome.
And we just kind of started it on a whim, thinking, well, maybe this is a good way to start this. And after 6 years of data, we have learned that we estimate that 80% of our graduates, or our alumni, as we call them, are still exercising at or above the 150-minute recommendation of the American Cancer Society. And that's the main gist of we got to change people's behavior enough that they continue to exercise even when we're not holding their hand.
Now,
it's really, really cool.
Now, why do you think that is? You think it's because it's such an encompassing sport like triathlon? You picked something that you really needed to sink your teeth into, because it's difficult to toe the line of a triathlon, the starting line of a triathlon, unless you put some time in.
Yeah. Well, we've actually been collecting research on it. So what the data telling us back is, number one, it's a individual sport, but it's a team concept. So these people are, it's in a group of other cancer survivors. So they're people with like a like history, which they really have bonded with. It's medically directed. So at every training, there is a physician, a physical therapist, and often a nurse. So they feel safe. It is professionally coached. And what I really think makes a difference is, I compare it to the old tale of, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. Mm-hmm. If you teach him how to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. So not only do you just show up and exercise, our coaches actually teach teach people how to exercise. So how to take the front wheel off of your bike and get it in your car.
Yeah.
How do I pick out a good pair of walking shoes? And then we introduce people to places to bike, swim, and run all over the city. So we teach people how to go from, you know, week one, where I just walk up and down the block for 15 minutes to, you know, the next week I progress to this. So it's a literal exercise prescription that they follow. So when they're done, they have that skill set of knowing how to progress, what to do, and how to do those activities.
You also picked a cool sport because it's got three different, vastly different components in it. So it doesn't necessarily get old. That's why I still do triathlons to this day.
Yeah. So the fact that it's multi-sport is a drive for people. But in my opinion, one of the largest effectiveness points for this program is that it's goal-oriented. So if you go to an exercise flask for cancer survivors for 10 weeks, you show up, you know, twice a week, and then at 10 weeks, you're done. Mm-hmm. That's okay. But when you show up for 14 weeks twice a week, and then we throw you in the water.
Yeah.
That whole goal at the end completely changes the way these ladies look at it. So they said, like, well, we're not exercising, we're actually training.
Right.
It changes the mindset, changes the intent and the goal of the program. So we even teach them, you know, goal setting. So I think it's that accomplishing something that to them was completely, at least psychologically, unattainable. And for many of these people, physically unattainable at the beginning. I think it's that empowering that makes it so successful.
And that's been going on for 6 years?
Mm-hmm. Just completed our 6th year. And the way I like to say that is, you know, cancer takes away from people sometimes something that we can't in healthcare give back to them. So the surgeons and the radiation oncologists and medical oncologists can, you know, take the cancer out and treat it to keep from coming back. Rehab therapists can rehabilitate people, but there's just something it takes away that we in healthcare can't give back. And that's where Team Phoenix comes in. It gives people back their mojo, they call it, their confidence, their ability to take on something scary and be successful.
And where did the name come from? Is that a kind of a nod to the name as well?
It came from our first group of athletes. They actually, our 2011 team came up with the name. They came up with the logo. And because again, as you are maybe aware, the phoenix is a bird, a mythical bird that when it gets injured or wounded, it turns into flame and is reborn from the ashes.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect, and our jerseys are really cool. So we've got a really cool phoenix logo. So they came up with the name in it. And 6 years later, we are still kicking. It's really, really awesome.
Well, good for you. Is there a spot people can go online and find out more information about that specifically? Because I can already hear the emails coming in, people asking me more about that.
It's teamphoenix@aurora.org.
Okay, and we'll put the link up at the website.
Is the email?
Cool. I want to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about being the tallest person in China, and we'll get into a few more startling statistics in cancer and physical therapy. When we come back on the other side of the break, it's the PT Pinecast. Don't move. We tweet, we post, we snap, we Insta, we MySpace. What? No more MySpace? Damn. Online on all social media platforms at PT Pinecast, except for MySpace. Considering a travel assignment over the holidays, or ready to escape the cold weather for some winter sunshine? Arias Medical Group is the leading healthcare staffing agency, offering travel and full-time career opportunities for PTs nationwide. Call Arias at 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com.
Let's give a nice, warm Winterfest welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. And we're back on the PT Pintcast. We are talking oncology PT with physical therapist Leslie Waltke. Going to get into three questions powered by our sponsors at Arias Medical Staffing. Leslie, if you could work somewhere as a physical therapist in the 50 U.S. states that you've never worked before, where would it be?
Wow, I would probably have to go with the mountains of Colorado.
Yeah, it's not a bad spot to be, especially this time of the year, just getting into snow season.
Yeah, snow season, but even biking, cycling season. I'm a big cyclist. So yeah, cycling season, skiing season, hiking season. Yeah, that would be pretty awesome.
Difficult to miss in Colorado.
Yeah.
Second question on three questions. What is something that you are currently or just read? It can be non-PT or PT related that you really liked.
Let's see. You know what I just picked up and I haven't read it yet, so it's not really an answer to your question.
That's all right. Give us something good.
But it's called When Breath Becomes Air, and it was written by we just lost him a couple months ago, but a neurosurgeon who specialized in brain cancer, who got brain cancer himself.
Oh, wow.
But everybody keeps talking about how phenomenal it is, so I'm looking forward to picking that up. I've got it on my nightstand, but it's still hasn't been broken in yet. I'll get to that.
Third question on three questions. Who's somebody within the field of physical therapy that everybody should know more about? Maybe somebody who's flying under the radar that we should give a name drop to.
Let's see. There's some really cool people doing some stuff with Parkinson's disease.
Where are they out of?
Aurora Sinai Medical Center in Milwaukee. But there's just a lot of, and even innovative PTs around triathlon, looking at using triathlon for a lot of chronic diseases, like taking that same model and applying it to muscular dystrophy or post-stroke or Parkinson's disease. We just really have got to change the way we think about applying, you know, rehabilitation. You know, PTs don't hold on to their patients long enough. It drives me nuts. You know, we're so stuck on the impairment-based model of you. If somebody hurts themselves, then you treat them three times a week for 4 weeks, and then they're done. You know, we need to start taking responsibility for our patients that we are, we need to adjust our thinking to being primary care treatment people. And you are my patient. Yes, we're going to work on this for, you know, a couple weeks, couple months, but I'm still your PT.
Right.
I offer my patients lifelong care. So if you get something, you sprain your ankle, you hurt your shoulder, you may call me and I say, hey, you know what? I might want you to see Jimmy for that because he's better at treating your shoulder than I am. But I need to know because you are my patient. I'm going to hold on to you forever.
Yeah, we just had a conversation with the president of the Florida Physical Therapy Association, Kathy Zwanek, and she said the same thing. I want people to change just how they say it. I want to be your PT. I want you to say, well, my PT says this. Because a lot of times my dentist or my doctor will say this, but I go to PT or I had PT, but just changing that verbiage right there to my PT is a big difference.
Right. Yeah, because how often do you go see a medical provider? When you walk in the door, you don't know who you're seeing. You just go to a clinic and they smack you with whoever. That's just not a good model for our profession, and that we don't. So, you know, and I am fortunately in a place where when my patients come in, they know they're coming to see me. They know what I look like. They've had my bio, the surgeon, the medical oncologist, the radiation oncologist, the nurse navigator, they've all talked about me. They know. And that's a much better model to be successful for me. And they get the benefit because they're the one receiving the care. Just a much, much better model.
You've talked internationally. You've gone global. I know you're doing some stuff over in Europe very soon, and you've been to China. Mm-hmm. And somebody really told me that you tend to stand out in a place like China.
Well,
why is that?
For your radio crew out there, I am a 5'11 blonde haired, blue eyed woman. I actually made people trip. They were so. First of all, in China, there's not a lot of racial diversity to begin with.
Right.
So anybody that's not Asian sticks out quite a bit. But then when you get somebody who's 5'11 blonde female, people were actually tripping and they had no problems just staring and picking up their jaws off the floor. So it was a unique experience.
I bet. Yeah, it sounds cool. So now we're talking about global. So let's apply to what we were talking about before the break. Globally, the number of cancer patients and survivors in the U.S. and globally is skyrocketing. They're going to suffer more psychological decline and functional loss than they need to if we don't jump in and help. How do we expand this globally, or how are we expanding this globally to get the word out?
First of all, let me back up with you a little bit. The number one reason that cancer diagnoses, the number are going up. So actually our incidence of cancer is actually dropping a little bit.
Okay.
But number one reason for this global surge in cancer volume is basically because there's just so many more people. So most of that increase is based on volume.
So the percentage might be going down, but the number of people is just going up.
Right. So there's just more of us to get cancer. And then most cancers, the incidence of diagnoses goes up with age, and we're all getting older as well. So that's the main reason. Reason number two is that people in Africa, people in Asia that didn't used to live past the age of, 50 now are living longer. So they're living long enough to get many of the cancers, unfortunately. So that's where a lot of that comes from. And unfortunately, a lot of the places in Africa and some places in Asia just are not going to be well enough equipped to handle this, which is terrifying. But we as physical therapists, again, there's people all over the world that are actually doing this. It's been cool to reach out to physiotherapists in Europe and that are working with cancer patients. But again, international collaboration and social media has been so phenomenal at bringing PTs together across the globe to say, okay, where are you at? What are you doing with your cancer patients? How can we collaborate together? My tagline for my business is making the world a better place for people with cancer, because we have so much opportunity from a physical therapy profession to impact, again, quality of life. It's what we all do as PTs. But when you step into the world of oncology, you get to literally help people live longer and you can actually save lives. And it's done with the average PT can do this kind of work. They really can with a couple of tweaks and in their knowledge.
Some knowledge.
Yeah. Because the average PT clinic, believe me, the cancer PT clinic doesn't have any special equipment that the typical orthopedic clinic doesn't have. It's just how you apply what you know to a different population.
Yeah, you said it lengthens and saves lives, but also what I liked that your point earlier was it improves the quality of that life. You said when someone walks out of your clinic and they feel better and they're excited to come back again, you've got them exercising, that's part of their routines, a part of their treatment, and they continue that on, they're going to add some life to their years instead of just years to their life.
Yeah, so it hits both. So they live better, they live longer. So many times people with advanced disease, so the disease has left its original location, and at some point, whether it's weeks, months, or years, is going to end their life. The data is very clear. Again, we can help those people live better, but live longer. Again, for reasons that we don't clearly understand, again, the exercise itself is somehow, you know, minimizing the cancer growth. Number two, by keeping cardiopulmonary strength maximum, it gives the patient and the physician more options in their treatment, because one of the biggest limiter in how much chemotherapy you can give somebody is their cardiopulmonary function. Mm-hmm. So if you can improve performance status, maintaining ejection fraction above 50%, wow, patient's got three options instead of just one. Mm-hmm. So the more options you have, the more treatment you can get, the longer you're going
to
live.
I like that. Can't wait to spread the word about this. You can check out more information online at Waltke Academy. That's waltkeacademy.com. You can find out more information of what Leslie is tweeting out. Her handle is at Leslie Waltke. And again, Waltke. All right. Every episode that we record is a pint. But before we're done with the pint, we have shots, parting shots of wisdom.
This is the parting shot.
Powered by Optum Fellowship, Optum is solely focused on clinical decision making and approaches that make sense. Offering a COMT, Certificate in Manual Therapy, as well as an APTA accredited fellowship in Orthopedic Manual Therapy. Offering both online and in-person mentoring with locations in Houston, Dallas, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Find out more online at OptumFellowship.com.
If you had the field of physical therapy listening, what would you like to have them know? What parting shot of wisdom about how they can impact making the world a better place for people with cancer?
So the parting shot is, persons after stroke, disease, accident, orthopedic surgery are routinely ushered into physical therapy. So why not our folks with cancer? They have the same problem list. So in changing the way they think, I will always say, don't think outside the box, because your cancer patient needs you to be a rehab therapist because nobody else is taking care of their function or their pain level. But you do need to make your box much bigger. We've got to stop thinking about cancer rehab as just treating lymphedema or just post-operative range of motion. You need to make your box big enough where you are now addressing the cardiopulmonary, functional, and musculoskeletal problems from diagnosis all the way through survivorship. So before and after surgery, during and after chemotherapy, and during and after radiation. So don't think outside the box. Just make your box a lot bigger to make sure you're capturing the musculoskeletal cardiopulmonary needs of your patient through maybe an entire years-long cancer treatment, because depending on what kind of cancer intervention they're getting is going to determine what kind of problems they're going to have. And you need to be there for that patient the entire treatment trajectory.
I like that. Make your box bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie, I appreciate you coming on the show. I doubt this is going to be the last time we hear from you. I expect more big things. Again, you can check her out online at waltkeacademy.com or on Twitter at Leslie Waltke. Appreciate you having a drink with us and sharing some knowledge about something I think more people definitely need to know about.
Fantastic. Glad to be here.
Our home on the internet is ptpintcast.com.
The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.